What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Tasting Room live stream on February the 5th, 2024.
Hello.
Mr. McElroy riding shotgun again, or maybe I'm riding shotgun. I don't know.
I'm or definitely riding that, shotgun.
Are we in that deal? What was it called where the motorcycle had the buggy?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what this is. What was that called? Do you remember? I'm going to have to think of that. Maybe our guest, John Pierce from Coffee at Heirloom, knows what those are called. Not tricycle. Come on, man.
I don't know.
So here's the lay of the land for tonight. We'll have John Pierce join us here in just a second. Give us the lowdown on Coffee at Heirloom, which is nearing its opening date.
Nearing.
We'll talk all sorts of stuff. Oh, Alexa wanted to say something, apparently. talk about all that stuff with him. And then we have to talk about your, you mentioned it last week, but your viral video.
Yeah, it went
on
real,
the goosting
link. It went real viral.
Yeah.
Much more viral than
people
we were
calling
expecting
him
it.
Farm boy version of Seth Rogen. And I mean, all sorts of stuff. So
most of it was compliments.
Most of it was actually. Yeah. Some people saying they have to come to Tulsa just to try the goosting link in a beer. So,
which they actually did. Some of them did.
Okay. Save it.
Yeah.
We'll get there. We'll play another edition of Name That Beer, which is what I've coined our game.
I like it.
It sounds like one of those cheap, like, 80s name that beer. And then you like the
and now
the stupid like theme song starts playing. This is going to be a fun episode. I can feel it. All right, let's bring John Pierce on. My man, how are you doing, sir?
What's up, y'all?
You know, living the dream over here. How are you?
Oh, doing good, feeling good.
Hey, those are two good things to be doing and feeling. Tell you that much. We have a lot to get to. Obviously, Coffee at Heirloom, the new venture. Let's take it back. Let's go old school for the people that don't know. And hey, it's Tasting Room, so you're welcome to crack something if you want or sip on some coffee, whatever it is you want to do over there. Let us know, like, for the people that don't know, your background in coffee, what got you hooked on it, what got you into it, all of those
caffeine got him hooked on it.
Well, that is true.
Real. Yeah. I mean, I started brewing just coffee at home mostly. I started kind of nerding out, having fun with like French presses when I was in high school, and then slowly moved into pour overs and collecting those. And then I started working in coffee in Kansas City, actually.
Okay. Oh, cool.
Yeah, at a shop called Parisi Artisan Roasters. And I was just really lucky to get hired on the same time as another dude that's a really big deal in the coffee industry named Pete Licata. He won the like world barista championship. I think it was back in 2014, if I got that right.
I was going to say, I couldn't remember the year, but you're right. It was somewhere right around there.
Yeah. And so he was just on staff at the time, and the dude that roasted his coffees for Worlds was there. And I spent a lot of time with them, down at their roasting plant, just hanging and talking and learning. And so, yeah, that was a really good base for me. And, you know, when I moved to Tulsa, I was at Topeka for a little bit. And then I'd been cooking up the idea to do Cirque for years at that point, ever since I was back in Kansas City. You know, I started kind of just dreaming up what would be sick to do as a concept. And so, you know, we did Cirque back in 2016, I think. And, I've been out of the game for about 3 years, but I'm excited to get back in.
Yeah, well, man. Welcome back to the game.
Tulsa and us coffee snobs like myself and Jake. And I know there's a culture of us. We're happy to have you back in the game as well. Curious though, I want to go back to the Kansas City thing you were talking about. What is it like to work with someone that wins the world barista like competition? Is there just, is it, because I've never thought of it this way. I mean, I've had Ian on the podcast before from Topeka and he's competed in it and did well. But like, is it almost like an amateur golfer versus a pro golfer, a high school basketball player versus an NBA player? Like, what is it that makes him so much better than other baristas?
Well, you know, he was competing in the barista comps, but Pete was actually the head of like the quality assurance for the whole company. And so the dude just had years and years of experience and the know-how and ability to pull off and execute, you know, drinks and great knowledge of roasting, great knowledge of brewing. Yeah, the dude just kind of like really, really knows his stuff. And so, yeah, being able to hang out with someone like that and get that kind of base of understanding to start, I think, I mean, that helped me out so much. I'm so thankful for those years.
Sure. My non-barista brain was thinking like maybe he was like drawing self-portraits with cream, you know, like or milk when you're putting it in a latte.
Yeah.
I thought maybe it was that kind of skill. I didn't know exactly how they were judged in the competition, so I wasn't sure.
Yeah,
he's over here making the Mona Lisa out of milk,
right? You know?
Yeah, latte art's a part of it for sure. I mean, he's good at that, no doubt.
Yeah,
he's making shading.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. All right. So the Genesis, we talked to Jake Miller a couple weeks ago, who he and, you know, Melissa own Heirloom, just about the Genesis from his side on doing something different on the hours where the brewery wasn't working, all this different stuff. I know you had mentioned you were wanting to get back into the game. Mm-hmm. What connected with Jake, with Melissa, with Heirloom? What made this make sense for you?
Yeah, Jake and I have been friends for years. I think that we connect really well over our passion for super good drinks. I'm a liquid lover. What can I say?
Amen. Amen to that. This is Liquid Lovers Anonymous right here. So we're good.
You're in good company.
Yeah, and the dude's got a great approach to his craft, and also I'm just homies with a bunch of his staff too, and so I've just been going in there for a while, and it was just good timing, to be honest. He approached me about the concept, just like he actually asked me, like knowing that I wasn't really wanting to do a shop anytime soon, because I've been cooking up a roasting concept that I want to get to in the next couple of years. But I really didn't have like an actual shop on my radar, just because they're really expensive to build. And to be honest, they don't really make a ton of money. And so
it's true. OK,
yeah. Like he kind of just approached me with like, hey man, do you know anyone that would be interested in putting a shop?
He played it right. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, me, like
right here, yeah, man. So, right here. I'd like it.
Yeah.
Vote me. I had to think about it for a little bit, but the more we started talking, like, you know, actual numbers, and I started getting some good estimates, and you know, it started to shape up really nicely. And so it ended up being a pretty easy decision for me to want to move forward with it. And the timing just ended up almost perfect for me. So it was great. Came together nicely. Yeah.
No, that's awesome, man.
And the rumor is you're going to be open at 7.
Yeah.
Can I say that?
That is what Jake said.
I just said that.
Jake said it though.
Oh, okay.
So if we blame anybody, we blame Jake. Yeah. Is that your plan though, to open early in the morning?
Yeah. Hours are going to be 7 to 3. We're going to be closed on Mondays, at least to start.
Okay.
We're going to kind of
talk about Mondays.
That's fair. Though I'm just happy that I might be able to drive down the road and get a coffee before 9.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah,
no offense to anybody else, but
yeah, we're not throwing shade at anybody anywhere. We're equal opportunity coffee lovers, but there is something about, I mean, I think I mentioned this off air a little bit when we were catching up, but I mean, Jake and I both are subscribed to entirely too many like bean subscriptions or whatever you want to call it. Like I have one from Onyx. I have one, I can't even remember the name of the other one now. It's Corvus out of Denver.
I do the same stuff.
Yeah. And so it's like, oh God. And then every time, like, you know, I watch F1 a lot with Jake, and when we do it at his house, he'll have 8 bags on the island and be like, all right, what beans do you want today? And there's one from New York and there's one from there. And it's just like, oh God. So I do agree that like that relationship just kind of seems to make sense. How long did it take you to figure out how exactly you wanted to do it, as far as what equipment, how much of it, like how did you figure that part out?
To be honest, I think the concept came together in my head pretty quick. I was kind of just weighing a couple different factors, like number one, kind of what's already the vibe in Heirloom, because I was just, you know, I'm obviously kind of just riding off of that. They're offering me this incredible space. I want to utilize the best shop that would fit in that, you know? And so it kind of just narrowed it big time for me. And then I kind of just got to decide, okay, what style do I want to execute the drinks? I think I've always appreciated the shops that have a very simple menu. And we leaned into signature drinks really hard, especially like, you know, in the beginning at Cirque. But it felt nice and kind of refreshing to move away from that. So we're actually not going to do that at all.
Oh, wow. Okay. With this concept. Right on.
It's just very focused. That's kind of what I've been saying about it all along, but huge focus on just single origin coffees. There's no blend. That. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So does that mean, well, let's get into the nitty gritty, into the details. So does that mean when you look at the menu, you would have what kind of options? You would obviously have pour over. Would you do like a French press as well? Would you do espresso? So like cortados and that sort of thing, or where do you draw the line?
Yeah. No pour over.
Oh, no pour over. Okay.
Whoa.
No pour over. When I say, yeah, focused and simple, like really, really simple. So we're going to have batch brew. It's on a great batch brewer. I really think that we'll be able to dial it in and have it producing very near pour over like quality. And then we'll just have a single origin coffee on batch. That'll probably rotate, you know, every few days to every week or so, that single origin coffee on the batch. And then there'll also be a single origin coffee on espresso. And
nice.
You know, we will have like latte type drinks, you know, just, we're kind of just calling them lattes, and we're just going to run them like small sizes through 12 ounce being the biggest. 12 ounces, the biggest on cold latte as well. And
okay.
Yeah. So just, and that's like pretty much the whole menu. We're going to have,
I love it.
Yeah.
Awesome.
We'll have a pretty special cold brew, release just a little bit after open. We're going to wait until like our first full week to drop that. But,
that's fair. You don't want to bite off too much as you open.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, it's feeling tight, you know,
which is good. Nice. Any food pairings that you're going to offer? Anything to snack on for breakfast or anything for people that come through?
Yeah, we will. We're working with Country Bird. We're going to have some there items from Kat. Yeah, I mean, y'all
just
know
the best
Country
bakery
Bird
in the state. I mean, come on.
Yeah, like no one's doing it like them. So, no.
And the line tells you so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Kat and her crew just absolutely kill it. I love them. We probably won't have them all the time just because, I mean, they're already pretty capped as far as like capacity. They're just, you know, they're busting their ass just like trying to keep up with their own demand. And so we'll get a proofed item about once a week in, and then here and there we'll have some like just grab and go items like cookies and stuff. But other than that, we're working with Bo over at Dante's and, looking at having some pretty creative, cool little breakfast items out of his truck.
Oh, no, nice. Sick. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Tap into him, I was going to be mad because he's right there.
And his shit's too good too.
Yeah. You know, you're surrounded by awesomeness over there.
Seriously. Yeah. No, it's a blessing to have like just be invited into this thing where there's already incredible work being done just like all around me. I'm psyched about that. Yeah.
I mean, what else could you ask for? You have great beer, you have great pizza, you have great baked goods, and you have great coffee.
Boom.
Come on. I mean,
come on. Yeah.
So surrounded by greatness, like I said. All right. So let's talk about the sourcing of the beans. Cause this, I asked you earlier, before we went on, I said, is this something where like down the line you see yourself, you know, picking up a backpack and hitchhiking to Nicaragua or something like that to go meet the grower at a farm? And I'll let you answer that again, but I was surprised, yeah. But also I appreciate your answer.
Yeah. So we're going to stick to being a multi-roaster. I do have a roasting project probably, you know, a year or two down the road. But it'll kind of be its own thing. And Coffee at Heirloom will kind of just stay Coffee at Heirloom. Really kind of just built this thing with a specific vision in mind, just to kind of, I've been telling the staff, like our goal with this is literally to just like start well and execute the concept. Like that's it. And so it really won't grow in scope. It's not, you know, we're not going for locations. We're just gonna do this sure. thing and run it. And that's kind of it. And is that a thumbs up? Nice. I keep bumping my espresso machine.
Not you good.
But
so let me ask you this. When it comes to the selection,
I got away from the question, but
no, you're good. You're good. You answered it. There are so many good, like if you want to call them craft roasters or whatever the right terminology there is, yeah. How are you going to, well, let me, this is kind of a twofold question. How does that work? So like, can you just, I'm assuming you can't just like buy Onyx and then turn around and sell it without like some sort of a commercial agreement with them or something like that. But then yeah. How also are you going to narrow down who you pick? Cause there are a ton of good options out there.
Yeah. Honestly, I've kind of just continued to nerd out on coffee here at my house the past few years. And, I just buy coffees that I see are interesting, and I've really latched onto a couple roasters over the years. Yeah, so first up, we've got Prodigal. I actually have some right here.
There you go.
Boom.
Love it.
Prodigal. Out of Boulder.
Pretty bad.
Yeah. They're out of Boulder. Run by a dude named Scott Rao. He's kind of like a very leading voice in the specialty coffee scene and has been for a long time now, and he just opened up a roasting concept like in the past year, I think, maybe year and a half, and they've just been putting out some really like coffees that have really been blowing my mind. And so I'm really excited to have them up first. The roaster that will onboard second is Nomad out of Spain. They're That's probably cool. My favorite roaster in the world. Yeah. I've really been trying to kind of explore what other international roasters are doing that have kind of been making waves in the scene. And I love Nomad. I love what they're doing. I also want to work with La Cabra. They're in Denmark. Pretty excited to get some of their stuff in too. One of my buddies, Ian Walla, he worked for us for a while at Cirque. He's one of our managers, but he's running La Cabra, their North America branch, out of New York right now, and they are just killing it. Like, he's doing such a good job. La Cabra does incredible. So
do they have any affiliation with Noma in Denmark? Do you have any idea?
I don't know. Maybe.
Okay. Maybe. I feel like I've read that somewhere. I've seen it somewhere. Maybe Noma serves their coffee as like a option. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I've seen that somewhere, and I didn't know if you knew off the top of your head.
Cool.
Well, that's really cool.
John, before.
Yeah, go ahead.
What? So, okay. You named three different places that sound really great, and I haven't had coffee from them. sadly.
We've been about to, though, so it's that's a
good thing. Yeah. Well, I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
I know from a personal standpoint of like how I find maltsters of, you know, better and different quality for like the malt that I use in the beer, but I like coffee, but I don't know if I could actually say, hey, this roaster is doing a better job than another. Like I know when someone's like handling quality coffee well, and I gravitate towards it, but I don't know why.
Yeah.
What, in your experience, what's the biggest differential in how someone's handling the coffee, roasting it correctly to where you get excited about it?
It's a great question.
That is a good question.
Cause I honestly, I have no clue.
Yeah.
To be honest, it probably mostly just comes down to attention to detail. And so, you know, something that Prodigal talks about a lot is how fresh their coffees are. And so they're usually only picking coffees that are literally like a couple months off harvest, which like even getting a coffee, you know, in the same year that it was harvested is usually like a good sign of quality. And so they're kind of just taking it this another step further and trying to get that in literally as fast as possible from harvest, which really, it takes a lot of work and planning because you got to be in contact with these farms where you're getting these actively extremely fresh samples, you know, and then kind of having the, I guess like knowledge and planning to be able to know what that's going to roast like a couple months down the road when it's actually ready for export. Cause there's just, you know, internationally, you know, as I'm sure you've bought international grain and stuff, but like it's, 100%. You know, it can get, you know, stuck in customs and just take a while to export sometimes. And so it just takes a lot of work for roasters doing stuff like that to get their stuff in extra fresh. And then beyond that, it's just skill in a roaster, to be honest. And roasting's really hard. So, yeah, some, you know, a lot of really great roasters will get the same bean in because they all recognize something that is great quality. And so a lot of these great roasters will get the same coffee in, but usually it's pretty obvious who roasted it the best. And sometimes that is a style preference as far as, you know, drinkability in the cup. But sometimes that's just like a genuinely like, oh no, these guys roasted it better type thing. Yeah.
Is that like a timing or like heat thing? Because I know in my world, you can definitely taste a, like if a malt has been kilned too long or at the wrong, in my world, kilning like on different elevations with different temperatures and whatnot in different times is a huge deal. I'm sure timing and heat and this, that, and the other goes into the coffee world.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. In roasting, the biggest variables that you're keeping your eye on are, you know, you're essentially cooking those beans in the roaster.
Yeah.
And your goal is, you know, a slow, steady, even transfer of heat. And you're going for like the most even coloring throughout, the most even development. And that, you know, it can kind of depend what type of roaster you have. If you've got one that's like using actual gas burners on a rotating drum, or if you're using an air roaster that sends superheated air into the drum, there's just so many different ways to go about it, how to, you know, get that heat transfer. But, you know, the good roasters will just roast with, you know, at a certain time frame. Everyone talks about an S curve that you kind of build on the roaster, as far as the heat development and profile that it follows, you know, with the temperature. And so, yeah, it's a lot of moving parts for sure.
Sounds like it. I'm curious yeah. with the international roasters and their beans and stuff. Like, let's just take the Spain one that you mentioned or whatever. Like, are you getting different tasting notes? Are they doing something different that makes it so unique, or is it just a different process that lends to that uniqueness?
Not, you know, most of the great roasters aren't really doing anything super special necessarily. They're usually just picking coffees that either they have a direct relationship with the farmer. And so that is definitely how some of these, you know, really high-end roasters get some of these phenomenal coffees, is from their partnerships on the farm level, because some of them are buying out whole lots, you know, and getting really cool exclusive coffees. But to be honest, it more comes down to the taste and preference of the roaster and what coffees they're choosing to purchase, and then also what style of roasting that they're doing.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
No, that makes perfect sense. One more question for me, and then we'll let you go and get on with your Monday night. I don't know if you have any more as well.
Maybe,
the biggest one is, are you an F1 fan? Because you're going to be open early on Sundays. Jake and I are fiends when it comes to F1, so we will be in there watching F1. If you're not, we're going to adopt you into the family.
Oh, no.
And, we're going to make you an F1 fan.
Yeah, no, we're going to be watching some F1. We're going to be drinking some espresso. Drinking some F1 and watching some espresso.
Oh, I love that. Did you see, let's just nerd out for a second. Did you see the livery reveal today for Steak?
No, I haven't seen anything today.
Oh, it's fantastic. They went with this black and lime green combo. It's cool. So that's the old Alfa Romeo that got bought and then completely rebranded.
Oh, okay.
And it's
looks good.
It's bad in a
looks
good
fast.
Way. In a good way. Yeah. Okay. It's like lime green on the nose, lime green in the tail, and like along the sides with like this carbon black. Like it's sick.
That sounds cool.
Sounds fast.
It is. All right, man. Well, we appreciate you coming on. We're really looking forward to the new venture. We'll see you later this week to make sure everything's on point. And then we will be frequent patrons once you officially open your door. Thanks for some of your time tonight, bud.
Man, it was my pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Of course, man. We'll see you later. Soon, dude. Have a good night.
See y'all.
That is John Pierce.
I'm ready to get caffeinated with him.
I know. I thought about having coffee because I tried to tailor the drinks to who our guests are, but then I would not.
We would both be awake until 8 a.m.
He'd be texting me all hopped up on caffeine at 3:30 in the morning.
We wouldn't have to do an ice bath.
Cold plunging in the morning? Are we cold plunging in the morning? Yeah, buddy. We are.
I have to re-wake.
So kudos to the guy next to me. He did show up. Was it all 3 days? Last week?
No, because...
Oh, you didn't on Saturday. Yeah, that's right.
Well, that was... Yeah,
it was just Tuesday, Thursday.
Yeah, I showed up Tuesday, Thursday.
You did.
I thought about messaging you on Saturday, but we were actually going to a birthing class. So...
Oh, that's right. We need to
talk about this. To have woken up like an hour earlier.
And so, it's Saturday.
Who wants it's to do Saturday. That?
Saturday was nearing the line of the water being a little too warm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. It was like 58.
And it was kind of raining.
Yeah, it was, but I love it in the rain.
Oh, that's yeah.
It makes it kind of cool.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it was like 58 or 59, the water, and you want to be under 60 ideally. So it's right there.
Yeah.
It's right there. I did fill it up earlier today and I think it gets down into the 30s or
so tomorrow morning, right?
So it'll be chilly tomorrow morning.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect.
I did text Ben Kilgore earlier because he had mentioned that he wanted to partake with us, but I do not think he's replied.
More guests, the merrier.
I know. Mary had said she wanted to do it too, but
yeah,
we got to get him out here now. I think she lives in Bartlesville, so that's a little bit of a hike. But maybe she could just do it like
virtual icing.
Yeah. I have a friend who's in New Zealand working at a winery, and she sent me a picture on Instagram.
That's awesome.
Like, I'm doing it from the ice chest.
That's awesome.
At the winery. And I was like, yeah, that's cool. All right. So how did the birthing class go?
It was good. That one. So, Saturday was our CPR, like infant CPR class.
That's fine. But I want to know about the birthing class.
Birthing class was good. I got to see some videos that I never want to see again.
You okay? Look, I haven't been through this, but I'm just going to give you advice because I'm sure this is accurate. And anyone that's
go for
watching,
it.
Leave a comment if I'm wrong. Uh-huh. You know, some dads are watching. Stay above the curtain.
Well, I mean, just I don't know. I might. You might not. It just
try.
It
kind of
depends. It depends on your situation. It depends on what's going on.
Well, yeah,
technically
true. Assuming everything is good.
Yeah.
Stay up near her face.
Yeah.
Just because I'm just speaking for myself. I don't know if that would just be burned into my, like, I don't
your
know.
Memory brain.
Yeah.
Well, the videos weren't bad. Because it was another person that you weren't connected to, it was kind of like, okay, that's what it looks like. Yeah. I don't know if I might go through the whole thing. I might see the whole thing. Who knows?
Well, you're a braver man than I.
Well, yeah.
I say that. I don't know what I would do in this situation.
Yeah, I don't either. Yeah. So I haven't. I'll let you know.
So did you? Was this like the practicing on breaths and stuff?
No, okay. It wasn't really about that. It was about, you know, how do you get into the hospital? How do you?
Oh, right.
Do you bring? What to expect? How to make your decisions about, you know, epidurals and medicine? When to take them? When to, you know, say no or all those sorts of things. So it was kind of like regiment of learning what to expect, how the day is going to go, that sorts of things. Yeah. So it was a lot of really good information because, you know, I didn't know that I needed to go to the sixth floor, turn to the right, check in.
Now you do.
You know, now I do. So where to park.
You're in birth month, aren't you?
I'm 20 days out. Yeah. It's the final countdown,
buddy. Man, that's I'm happy for you guys.
Yeah, thanks.
Your world is gonna be so different. I need a guest host for a couple weeks.
Yeah,
for at least 1 week. So if anybody wants to audition, just holler at me because this guy's gonna be
all it takes is coming in and you know, doing an ice bath.
That's true. It's very true. Okay, so let's talk about the elephant in the room, and it's that I'm sitting next to a social media starlet.
Starlet's a great term because I'm like not necessarily even close to what would be considered viral now.
Fair.
Kind of.
So where last time you looked, where were you at with the goosting wing video?
I think we're at 1.3 million views and like 26,000 likes and 27,000 shares. It's stupid.
And what do almost all of the comments have in common?
They all have some sort of connection to Seth Rogen, or that I sound like him, or I'm like Seth Rogen stuck in Chris Pratt's skin.
Yeah, I saw that one. I saw that one. It was a great deep dive on comments.
Oh man,
it was great.
The comments make me giggle a whole bunch.
They're so good. A lot of people commenting not only about your voice or your appearance or anything like that,
yeah,
but about the actual process of the goostingling. I think we talk about that last week. What
briefly? So I think.
Explain to it for people that might be listening or watching now. Yeah, don't know what that is.
So,
you were gonna bring it.
Oh, I was gonna bring it. Dang.
Okay, maybe next week.
Yeah. Goostingling is a hot iron stuck into a glass of beer. So going into a deep dive, the comments are like, that's not the word, or blah, blah, blah.
Or you're taking the alcohol out.
Or you're taking the alcohol. Yeah, yeah. So putting a hot iron into the beer, I didn't make up that word.
Goostingling?
Goostingling. I didn't make up that word. I found it. I would be the most creative person on the planet to come up with the word goostingling.
Sounds? Is that what that is?
No.
You had to make it up?
Yeah. No, I think goostingling, that I think, is to heat up rapidly.
Which makes sense.
Yeah. I think the more correct term is Bierstachel, which is
German word if I've ever heard.
Which
one.
Is really, really, I'm glad that it's called Gustingling. Yeah, Bierstachel.
How do the Germans speak like that?
I have no idea. Stachel.
Like you put your Stachel. Tongue like up in the top
and
of
it's
your
not.
Mouth.
I think it's spelled S-T-A-H-E-L. Wow. Stachel.
Wow.
Which means to beer poke.
Mm.
So I think that that's
logo up. Keep talking.
Yeah, I think that that's the more correct term.
Okay.
But anyways, I'm glad that we call it Gustingling at the brewery because that's so much easier to say.
And you can yell it and chant it.
You can
it,
yell it. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, no, the alcohol does not evaporate out of it. Think about it. How long does it take you to evaporate alcohol out of a 9% beer on your stovetop?
Yeah.
You've got to reduce it for at least a minute. To get all of the alcohol out. I'm not saying that some of the alcohol evaporates, but we're putting that iron in for less than 4 seconds. So the beer is 9%. You're maybe evaporating at most. I don't even know how to calculate it, less than 0.5% of alcohol. So, and then when you're evaporating liquid, you're also evaporating water.
True.
So you might actually just be reducing the alcohol and water content just equally. So it might actually go up in alcohol content. True. Don't check me on that.
It might. Who knows?
My challenge to people is like, if you do believe that it's de-alkalizing the beer, come in and have three.
I saw you.
And then see how you feel.
Let's stand up real quick.
Yes, let's
see
stand up.
See how you're feeling.
Let's see how fast we have to cut you off.
And then I saw a bunch of people saying they need to make the trip to Tulsa just to try it.
Dude, we had 7 people come down from Joplin, Missouri.
Shut up.
On Saturday.
No kidding.
Yeah. I was like, hey, I saw them walking away. I was like, hey, thanks for coming in. And they were like, dude, you're the guy on the video. And I was like, which one? Because I'm not necessarily on Instagram yet-ish, but I did know that this was popping off. And they were like, oh, we came for the Gustingling. And I was like, oh, did you really? And I was like, where are you guys from? And they were like, oh, we're from Joplin. And I was like, why are you in Tulsa? They were like, to visit the brewery.
For the Gustingling.
I was like,
we just told you.
All right. The video did its thing.
Wow. Did they like it?
They loved it.
Yeah,
I have not had anybody. I've had mixed reviews. I've had people, you know, most people just love it because it's a interesting experience with beer.
I think it really depends on what beer you do it to.
Well, of course.
I mean, I think that's like 90% of it, right?
Yeah, I've had customers do it with our IPA, and
that doesn't sound like I would enjoy that.
I don't
as much as
yeah. I don't necessarily enjoy it as much as like a stout or the quad or
I did
like
it with the anniversary porter.
Oh yeah.
And it was that's okay.
Yeah.
But I like it better with a stout. A little more substance to the beer.
You're gonna have more residual sugars. Yep. You're gonna have more caramelization. You're gonna have more of that marshmallow flavor come through, which is why you're going to want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really cool to kind of deep dive into the history of it, of why it actually became a thing. Is it so if you think about it, humans up until refrigeration enjoyed their beer at 50 degrees ish so cellar temperature.
So they still do in Europe,
in London
at least,
in some places. It's becoming less and less and less popular quickly.
When you have the Timothy Taylor in London, they just will not serve it in any temperature other than cask.
Yeah. Okay. Which is great. But, you know, I've had a lot of people recently tell me, you know, oh, well, beer is served warm in Germany. And I'm like, when did you go to Germany? And they're like, oh, well, I lived there in the 70s, nearing the 80s. And I'm like, no one in Germany. Well, I shouldn't say no one, but very, very, very rarely can you get a beer served not under 40 degrees. Mm-hmm. And it's just because we have figured out as a human race, we like to enjoy beer refrigerated.
Fair.
But
which is true. We do.
Well, but 400 years ago when this practice came about, the beer was coming out of the cellar or at the pub, you know, at 30 degrees because outside is below freezing and they didn't like it.
Mm.
So they were trying to warm it up. And the blacksmiths were like, let's do this.
What happens if we put this in there?
Yeah. Let's poke the beer with this. So
it does make sense.
Yeah. That was the birth.
An origin story, you know.
That's the myth of it.
Yeah.
I couldn't find anything definitive, but that's kind of the myth of it. Yeah.
We'll go with it. How much longer do you have it? Is it this month?
Yeah, it's up until the end of February.
Okay.
Yeah.
I need to come try this year's version of Felix. I haven't had a alcoholic drink yet. I'm still going strong.
Oh,
but
good on you.
I obviously,
not to my fault, because I was going really good.
Blaming other people now.
I am blaming other people now. Because I told my team I was going no alcohol, and then my sales director said, Austin, I have 3 beer dinners.
Whoops.
You got to drink with the customers. And yeah. I was like, oh.
We need to go back to White Lion, by the way.
That would be sick.
It's been a minute since I've been
over. It has been a long time. And Betty's doing really good.
We need to go. So before Lisa, I don't know if she feels like fish and chips right now or getting out of the house.
She feels fine.
Then maybe we should do that before baby comes. We should
That'd be great.
Do a fish and chips dinner.
That'd be great.
Side note, did you feel the earthquake the other night?
Yeah.
What in the world?
That was cool. Well, I mean, it wasn't cool
to the dogs.
Yeah.
They woke me up. Like I had just kind of dozed off.
Yeah.
And then I was like, what are you barking at, Prue? And then I hear this like, I can't even describe it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? And so I get out and I'm standing in that doorway right there and I'm just watching like this shake a little bit. Like, yeah,
it sounds weird.
It does.
Doesn't it?
It's you can't explain. It's unlike anything I've ever heard.
Yeah. 5.1.
Yeah.
And out in Prague.
Down in Prague. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just amazing to me. And at that point I was awake. Mm-hmm. So like I wouldn't go back to sleep for a while. So I started deep diving on earthquakes and like it blows my mind that the more shallow the epicenter is, the further it spreads.
Yeah.
I don't know why I would think it would be the opposite.
Well, think about it. If you're going to slap water,
mm-hmm.
the ripples go further than if you were going to move your hand underwater.
Yeah, I guess that does make sense.
Yeah.
I didn't think about it that way.
That was kind of
where were you a couple nights ago when I was racking my brain? Like, if we're this far away, you would think like,
Lisa was downstairs working. I was about to get into bed and I was reading a book and obviously, so we've had a lot of experience with earthquakes living in Japan.
Sure.
And, I felt the bed go like lurch,
mm-hmm.
like boom. And I was like, was that like a small earthquake? And then it was like, and I was like, whoa.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Because the feeling is, there is nothing like feeling an earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
The weirdest one that I felt was actually, so we were in Japan, and the Fukushima earthquake, that was like, I don't even know how to describe what that would feel like, but that was of 8.7.
Man.
So do you know how the ratings go?
In what way?
Like, you know, a 3 to a 4 to a 5.
Like what constitutes to a 6. It?
Yeah. No. So what
I would imagine like violence of shake, but
so time, violence of shake, this, that, and the other, but just to let you understand the magnitude of how much greater an 8.6 is than a 5.1 is a 3 is 2 times smaller than a 4. Then a 5 is 2 times bigger than a 4. And then a 6 is 2 times bigger than a 5.
So you'd be almost like 6 times bigger, basically.
You'd be
roughly by the time you get to the 8 from the 5.
So 2 times 4. So an 8 would be 16 times bigger 16 than times. A 5.
Gotcha. Oh, so it doubles. I
got yeah, it
or to the power of 2. Whatever.
To the power of 2. Yeah. Wow. So a 9 is technically, what would that be? Yeah, that'd be 16 or 18 times bigger than a what we felt.
Could you imagine?
Well, so we felt a 7. And that one was weird because the Earth was going in a circle.
That's trippy.
And it felt like we were being stirred in a cereal bowl.
Wow.
Like it felt like someone was taking it. It wasn't very loud, but it felt like someone was taking a spoon and stirring the building that we were in.
Did it do damage?
Probably.
Yeah.
But the ceiling fan was going. Woom, 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 woom. Yeah, it was weird.
Anyways. I remember the only one I'd been in before the other night that I could feel and like recognize.
Yeah.
We were in LA. And I don't remember why. I was a kid, but I remember it vividly. It's one of my earliest memories. I had to have been like 3, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in a mall of all places. And for some reason, I remember the earthquake happened and we wanted to get out of like the main area of the mall.
Sure.
So we went into like a chandelier store or something.
Smart place to go.
Yeah. Don't know if that was my mom or dad's call. Not sure why that was the place. I mean, it was just right by where we were. It was like lamps and chandeliers and stuff. And so we like step foot in there. And I mean, these things are just
swinging and banging.
Yeah. That's the only other one I've been in. No clue how big it was.
If they were swinging, it probably had to have been a 5 or larger.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think, it was around the time. I mean, I would have. So when was it 88 when there was it might have been the same earthquake that was during the World Series. You remember when the A's played the Giants? I think it was.
I wasn't alive like in 88, but
you young pup. I think that's when it was. And that would have been, I would have been 4. So it would have been sometime around. I wonder if that was the same one, but that one like buckled highways and all sorts of stuff. Yeah. That was a big one. But,
yeah. Those are wild.
Yeah. All right, let's play this game and then we'll get out of here.
Right on.
Name that beer.
Woo! Woo, woo, woo.
Give me a number between 77. Nope.
I think it's 8 and 300.
8 and 377. Like it is, yeah.
Let's do 43.
Okay. Any significance to that number?
There is a significance to that number. I lived on the 43 line in Vienna.
Cool. All right, you are in the bees.
In the bees.
Actually, possibly get this.
Okay.
Possibly.
Man, you never know.
No, no. Possibly.
All right, so I actually wrote a recipe today, so I'm in the mood.
All right.
So
a reminder, 3 questions to nail the style, and then an additional question to help name the country
name
of origin,
country.
And then you can take a wild card shot at the brewery.
At the brewery?
Yep.
That
was more for them and not you. I figured you remembered the game. Yeah. I know.
Yeah. Is the beer clear?
Not 100% sure, but I'm going to say yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Historically, I would say yes. And
okay. I like that.
Yeah.
Is it lighter than the color of a pale ale?
No.
So it's darker?
Maybe.
Okay.
There's another option in there, too.
That it is a pale ale.
I can't narrow it down for you too much. Yeah.
Is it hoppy?
Yes.
Okay. Is it a pale ale?
It is.
Wow. That was accurate questions.
First time.
I like it.
You nailed the style. All right.
No,
you didn't ask anything that would really like narrow down the country of origin necessarily.
Sure.
but you're welcome to take a, I mean, you get a question, but
I gotta, is it, I mean, is it on in the country of America?
No.
Dang it.
It is not.
That doesn't help.
I'll give
a
you
pale, a pale ale that's not on
I'll
the.
I'll give you some background.
Okay.
Founded by an Ohio native and his wife in January of 2001, this brewery has come to be considered this country's best brewery. After the six regular beers were established, later augmented by an American-style wheat ale, Blank Brewery then focused on many seasonal beers. The Blank, which is also the name of the brewery, have recently opened a tap room in Blank.
And it starts with a B.
Mm-hmm.
Man, best brewery in the country? That's quite the title. And they're from Ohio?
The man is from Ohio.
Man is from Ohio? Yeah.
His first name is Brian, if that helps you.
It doesn't.
Figured,
man, figured I don't know. Canada?
Japan.
I was about to say Japan.
That's why I said you might get this, because we just mentioned Japan.
I was about to say Japan.
What do you think is the best city or best brewery in Japan? So its address, no, I'm going to totally butcher this, is 94 Senbon Minato Cho, Numazu City, Shizuoka. Sure, we'll go with it.
Shizuoka.
Shizuoka?
Sure. I'll have to read it.
Yep.
They're in Japan?
Mm-hmm.
I don't. I
had have, I given you the name of the beer, you would have guessed it. Rising Sun Pale Ale.
Oh, yeah,
it for is sure. Baird Brewing.
Senbon Minato. Oh, that's the place.
Yeah, I didn't.
Numazu City. Senbon Minato Cho. Numazu City. Shizuoka.
There you go. All right, let's move
on. It's interesting because I don't think I had that while I was living in Japan.
Well, when were you there?
2014.
Okay, so they would have been around.
Yeah.
All right, give me another number.
114.
Ooh, I was at 116. That was close. Oh. Have fun pronouncing this one, John. You are in the C's.
In the C's.
C is in cat.
Is the beer style historically opaque?
Yes.
Okay. Higher ABV than 6%.
No. Those two things normally don't go together, do they?
No. Well, I mean, they can, just rare, which kind of narrows it down, sort of. Is it served in a chalice? a goblet.
Any beer could be served in a goblet.
Okay. Let me reframe that. Or redact that question.
Tell me this. What kind of beers are normally served in a goblet?
Belgian-style beers.
Oh, fair. Would you like me to answer that?
Sure.
No.
Okay. Hey, that helped me out.
There you go.
I'm going to say that it is a stout.
Close. It is a Dunkelbock.
Oh, a Dunkelbock.
Dunkler? D-U-N-K-L-E-R.
Dunklerbock. A darker Bock.
Maybe that's what it means.
Mild, I don't know.
Lightly bitter and with a harmonious malty aroma.
Yeah. I'm going to guess Germany.
Correct. Founded in 1738.
And it starts with a C?
The city has 4,000 inhabitants and 13 breweries. not a bad ratio.
Man.
The guy who founded it, George Fock, F-A-C-H, Fock.
Fock?
Yeah. It's got to be, right?
Or maybe even Fosh.
Fosh. We'll go with that. Sounds not like fuck. So Fosh, we'll go with that. Was not too... What?
Starts with that a is C? Word.
It's so bad. Basically, it's one of the most successful breweries in the country, is what it's trying to say. But...
This is?
The sentence was not formatted correctly. Yes.
And it starts with a C.
It does.
I have no guess.
Krailsheimer Engelbrauch.
Wow.
Come on, Austin. You should know that one.
Good on them.
Good on them.
And what town is it coming from?
You guys are learning that.
Krailsheim. Cool. I definitely heard of that town.
Krailsheimer is the brewery. Krailsheim is the town. They had to be, or, I mean, 1738 is early.
But yeah.
I was going to say, to have 13 breweries in a city of only 4,000 people in your brewery name to be the name of the city, you had to be pretty early on.
You had to be and pretty good.
Yeah, fair. Well, maybe not. If you were first, you could still be sucky, but true. Your name could be. All right, last one. Number. One of these times I'm going to guess your number.
Yeah, I know. Let's go 197.
Was it 208?
Ooh, close.
Okay. All right. You have a chance here.
Okay.
Ooh. Okay. Yeah.
You think I have a chance?
Yeah. I'm just trying to figure out. Yeah. Sometimes I don't know if the picture, which usually it's the top beer that's listed because they list two.
Sure.
Usually it is for the most part. This one I was trying to, you'll figure out why.
Okay. Okay.
You're in the H's.
I'm in the H's. Is the beer below 6%?
It is.
Okay. Is it more orange in color?
Can I phone a friend? I'm going to say yes.
Okay. It's more orange in color. Technically,
I'm going to assume that the picture it's showing is of the top beer that we're guessing.
Okay.
And I forgot to give you the option top or bottom. We were going to
show. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
But I'm going to assume it's the top and this one is more orangey than or whatever.
If I ever say the number twice, which I'm not going to remember, but you might remember the beer, you can say the bottom.
True.
One. Yeah.
True.
So
more orangey and under 6%.
Is it historically made on the North American continent?
As in continent of origin?
Correct.
No.
Okay.
Also, Instagram friends, you're about a minute and a half away from this live ending. Kicks us off at an hour. We'll be close to that timing, but you can hop over to YouTube if you want to see the end of it. Sean Clint, shout out. You fine American. I saw your comment. He's talking about it, that's a long story. I'll have to go through that some other time. Drop the world on him. Lil Wayne is involved in that story. It's a whole thing.
Right.
But he's down in Austin. He said he loves the coffee scene down there as well, which is very good.
Sweet.
Very, very good. As is most things in Austin. So much love, Clinchy. All right.
Love coffee.
So those are your three questions or just two?
I guess two.
Yeah. Color and ABV. Yeah.
Is it hoppier? Or...
I'm going to say it's more balanced.
More balanced?
Yeah, I'm going to say it's more balanced because they use that word in the description, so I'm going to go with it.
All right.
More balanced.
Well, actually, you're not wrong in that statement then. Usually if hoppy is in a beer, just to let you know, the style or the brewery has chosen to make that beer less balanced.
Mm. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Heavier on the hop, heavier on
yeah.
the... Yeah. Yeah, makes sense.
If you're malt forward, you're unbalanced.
Also fair.
Yeah.
So that actually does help you quite a bit then.
Yeah.
If it's described as being balanced.
Yeah. Listen, I'm going to call it a orange in color. Not on the American
Let me go back to the color.
Uh-huh.
This beer looks more orange in color.
Yeah.
I have seen this style of beer be more towards the golden
color
than orange.
Okay.
But the beer I am looking at, which I believe is this beer, is trending a little more orangey.
I'm going to shoot in the dark and say it's either an Oktoberfest or Marzen style.
I'm sorry. It is a Helles style.
Oh.
It is a Münchner Helles.
See, dang. Well, okay. So the reason why I got so close, an Oktoberfest. So a fest beer is an Imperial Helles.
There you go. So you were very.
So the way that you were describing the color,
yeah,
was making me lean towards Oktoberfest.
Let me show you that. Tell me that doesn't look orangey.
Right? Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
The description says this clear golden beer.
Yeah. Yep.
That's not a clear golden beer.
No, because you just showed me the brewery. So Hofbräu.
Oh yeah, I did.
That's fine. I was going to guess Hofbräu
when
I found out that it was German in the H's.
Yep. So congratulations, you got that.
Yeah. Well, that one's hard not to get right. But what's the second beer on there?
Dunkel, which would have been darker.
No.
You don't think so? Dunkel's not darker than that?
No. And that is not their Helles. 100% not their Helles.
Right?
No, because a Helles is like really golden in color.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's do one more because I screwed up that.
No, you didn't.
No, but I mean, I told you it was orangey. And then I kind of backtracked on it,
but I was so close.
If I would have said it was clear golden, what would your style guess have been?
If you would have said clear golden and the way that I guessed things, I would have still said Oktoberfest style.
Okay. Fair.
But the way that you were bouncing, because there's so many different. There's kind of a wide bandwidth of color for Oktoberfest, but that's why I said Oktoberfest or Marzen.
Do you want to do one more just for fun?
Okay.
And then we'll go.
Ooh, let's see. Let me see if I can guess which page you're on. 263.
254, 255.
Ooh, close.
Oh, this will be fun. Okay.
All right.
You're in the M's.
In the M's?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try to make this fast. Lower than 5%.
No.
Okay. So close to 5%.
Or
5%.
Ding, 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 ding.
I'm going to say it's lighter in color. I'm going to say that it's hoppier.
I'm going to say it's more balanced.
More balanced.
Yep.
Okay.
So I guess I should have said no. I gave you an answer, but okay.
No,
because it could have been more. That's malty, fine.
But yeah. More balanced.
More balanced.
That's fine.
More balanced than hoppy is what I would say.
Oh, that's so many things. I'm going to say that it's of the lager family. I'm going to say that it is a Czech Pilsner.
Nailed it.
Yes.
Nailed it.
Sweet. A
Czech Pilsner. Well done.
By the way, I did not know.
No.
I want that to be known. I did not know.
No. I don't know if you're going to guess the country of the brewery, but
it's in the what now?
The brewery is in the M's.
In the M's?
So I'll give you some sort of a hint here just by reading through.
Okay.
Stunningly appointed microbrewery with commanding views of the Derwent River and Mount Wellington from the second-story glass-fronted brew house, an offshoot of this blank winery, blank, has set a new benchmark among this country's craft producers with slick packaging, uncompromising beers, and premium pricing.
Australia.
Correct. Which was it, the mountain or the river?
The premium pricing.
Oh, really?
Yep. Okay.
Yep. Australia it is. Do you Australia. Know the brewery? Can you go 3 for 3 for the first time ever?
Oh my gosh, that would be. And it starts with an M?
M, as in Moss.
Oh, there's, a really cool there's...
name. It's technically in Tasmania. Berrydale, Hobart, Tasmania.
Interesting. There's like Mountain Friend, or I don't know very many Australia breweries.
Not Foster's.
Not, well, yes.
Australian for beer.
Australian for beer. I don't know.
Moo Brew.
Moo Brew.
Yeah.
Right on.
Great name for a brewery. Cool bottles.
That is cool.
Moo.
Right on. Man,
that's 2 for 3, man. That's
that's
solid. You did good.
You did right good, on.
Son. All right, so cold plunge in the morning. I'll put that up on Instagram probably. I didn't put Thursdays up because I just ran out of time, but
yeah,
I did put up Saturdays. Don't know if it'll just be you and I, or if we'll go take the temp of the water once we clean up in here.
Yeah.
Next Monday we'll be good to go, which will be the Monday before Valentine's Day. Maybe we should dress up. You want to dress up next Monday for the live stream?
Oh, yeah. Like in a suit?
Sure. That'll be 2 days before Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
I'll light some candles.
Oh. We can
just sit around here and eat chocolates.
Maybe drink some wine.
That's funny. Good job. Good guessing.
Right on. Thanks.
Thanks to John Pierce for joining us. Coffee at Heirloom opens that's next awesome. Week. We'll get to go make sure they have it on point, which knowing him, it will be.
Oh, I know.
Later this week. And then we will see you guys next Monday.
Right on.
Love you. Bye.
Cheers.